Lively.
Yes.
Today is April the 17th, Monday, April the 17th, Lakeland Housing Regular Board Meeting. The time is now 6 p.m.
It's ready.
Okay. It's 6:01. It's time for us to start our regular meeting of the Housing Authority Board, blah, blah, blah. We do have a quorum. I ask everyone to join us for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Recognize a moment of silence. Thank you. As I said already, we do have a quorum. Now we do have the agenda in front of us. Now I always ask if everyone had a chance to review the agenda and if you wish to approve the agenda. When we premise that with if you wish to approve the agenda, that goes with, of course, the assumption if there's anything you wish to add to the agenda tonight, you do it before we approve the agenda. That anything can be added to it, anything can be moved, changed with everyone else, approval. So as it stands, as it is, do we have an approval of the meeting agenda, or do you wish anyone have any additions, subtractions, changes they want to make to it?
Okay. And that would be under other business also? I just want to make sure I understand.
Well,
I want to be as compliant as possible.
Well, the approval of the meeting agenda, that we have so many spaces in here or places in here that we can add something to the agenda. On the first step, the approval of the agenda, under number 4, new business, we can add it to there. We can add it to old business, even though you have the subchapters there, and we can add it to other business. What we want to keep away from is after we've had all these places that we can add to it, that we don't stop at the end and add new business onto the agenda that maybe at that point can be added to the next meeting.
Okay.
Gotcha. All I'm pointing out is there are 4 places on this agenda that we have to add anything additional to it. And the first place, of course, is the approval. Matter of fact, I can even premise it before that. Everyone gets this agenda in the mail at least a week before, and everyone gets to review it. And you can say, you know what, Mr. Stevenson, I think I'd like to add, you know, the presidential election to the agenda, you know? And you add it to it, you know what I mean? So you really get a chance there, then you get a chance at number 1, and I'm just saying that, so we're not at the end, that we're closing down the meeting, saying, okay, I want to discuss Trump and his policies on LHA and HUD, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So we do have all, so whenever you say you see new business, say it. I got new business I want to take care of. Other business, if you feel it's not new, it's other business. It's old business I got to take care of. You know, other business, and that's, I got it. Let's take care of it.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying it for us.
I beat it like
no,
a horse.
No, you clarified it very much. Appreciate it.
So does anyone want to change the agenda, or we are going to approve the agenda for tonight?
I'd like to add, and I know it came in late, but I guess maybe I'm stepping in for her since she's not here. We did receive some correspondence from Ms. Perry at 4:01 p.m. this afternoon, and I'd like to put that as possible, something to discuss on the agenda if she would like to. I thought she did spend some effort to contribute it to us.
Okay.
I don't know if y'all had an opportunity to look at it or not. I know it came in late today, and maybe I shouldn't. I haven't spoke with her. But I did see her. She did look like she spent some effort on. I think she copied all the commissioners, the ED, and the attorney, I believe. But that's just something to possibly put on there because I think
we can add that to new business 4.
And if she doesn't,
on the travel policy.
If she doesn't, that's fine too.
What do you think, Reverend Richardson, Commissioner Sanders?
Yeah. We'll put it in and we'll discuss when we get to it.
Okay. Okay, then we have a change to the agenda to add. So do we need, Rick, do we need a motion to do that? No? Okay, we're just going to add to the agenda the evaluation under new business. We'll add it under travel policy, if that's okay with everyone. Okay, great.
And then, Mr. Chair, at the end of the meeting, to some of the commissioners aren't here, because I think it's good you've clarified that. You may want to reiterate that.
Okay, no problem. Okay, then do we have a motion to approve the agenda?
Approve the agenda as modified.
Okay, you have a second?
Wait a minute.
Did you get the change?
Yeah, but I didn't. Okay.
Under new,
I didn't get the change.
Okay, the agenda is going to be amended under new business, right under travel policy. We're going to discuss the executive director's evaluation. So it's almost like there's a 4A and a 4B. You know what I mean? Okay.
Motion by.
Reverend Richardson?
Reverend
Richardson.
I mean,
Commissioner DeSantis.
I may not have a correct agenda.
What do you
have? I only have under four, nothing.
Oh, I have yours. I'm sorry. I have yours.
Oh, no. I just, I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm just trying to.
The latest copy.
Yeah, I do not have the latest.
This is not off the presses.
Okay. No, that's fine. I'm just.
No, you're going to
look at it. I suddenly said AP, and I was like, I don't have any other in mind. So.
What is that?
You might have got yours early.
I got mine Thursday.
So,
you weren't left out. No, I wasn't meaning that. I just looked down when he referenced that. That's the only reason I said that. Not trying to be. Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. So we got a first. We just don't have a second yet.
Second.
Oh. We do have a second, a very aggressive second. Is there any AC in here, or are we all going to pass out?
The AC we're trying to fix is blowing hot air right now. So right now it's 83 degrees. It's going to keep increasing until we fix it, if we fix it. But soon it's going to be 90 degrees.
Listen, I'm understanding my mother's hot flashes so now.
Well, at least the water's a little bit cold. Warmer than this.
Well, it's an incentive to keep the meeting short.
Where are the napkins, man? Do you have napkins for everyone?
No, we don't know.
We're on the roll call.
Commissioner Pimentel.
Aye.
Commissioner Richardson.
Aye.
Commissioner DeCessary.
Aye.
Commissioner Sanders.
Aye.
Commissioner Robinson.
Abstain. Are we approving the minutes?
No, approving the agenda.
Agenda. Approved.
Okay. The agenda has been approved. Now we're up to item number two, approval of the minutes of the regular board meeting held Monday, March 20th, 2017. Has everyone had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes.
Okay. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
I make a motion to approve the minutes.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Any questions? Comments? Okay.
Commissioner Pimentel.
Aye.
Commissioner Richardson.
Aye.
Commissioner DeCessary.
Aye.
Commissioner Sanders, Commissioner Robinson,
Did you get Commissioner Sanders?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Oh. Sir. Now.
Sir.
Well, he did say hot
flashes.
It associates with the man.
Okay, the minutes have been approved. We're up to item number three, public forum. Anyone from the public forum? Okay.
Wait a minute. I like Don, but public forums means what?
Public forum means that from the public.
Right. At this time.
Yeah. And do we need to be consistent on how we treat everybody that comes in?
Well, what?
Okay. I'm just
here's. It's always up to if he's asking that he wants to speak later, then we just put it to a vote to the board, and if they agree with it. And we go with it. It's not, like I said, okay, you can speak whenever you want.
Well, I put it to the board. Let's make them, each time a person were to come in and speak, let's weigh it on its merit
at that time. If we were to do that, we're going to change each time. Last week, we had some, 2 weeks ago, we had some people to speak on the housing that they live in, and we put them up first, and then at the, during the meeting, if they had something to say, they couldn't say it until the next meeting. I think Don Brown represents the entire community, not just one sector. So I think he would carry more weight than anyone else, not anyone else in the community, but he does carry a lot of weight. I think we should hear him. If it's okay with you, we can just put him in the beginning or at the end, not anywhere during the meeting.
Well, I think, and my memory's not good, but I think at one time we had the public forum at the end.
Yeah.
And we brought it to the front for the purpose,
what?
For consistency and also things like that, because sometimes they, but, I mean, I'm just a big believer in consistency and treating, if it was anybody in the community, the same, not to show any favoritism toward anybody. I think we should treat everybody the exact same and consistently. That's my thing. That's,
I agree. We should either have it in the beginning or at the end.
And no disrespect to Mr. Brown.
No,
it's
not,
just,
no,
I just want to be consistent.
There's no disrespect because we have people that want to say something last time.
And they get turned away.
Right. So let's keep it in gear.
It's not that we have people that want, is once they speak at the public forum and they give their, say, presentation, I'll say, and the public forum is over, it's done, they don't address the board, they don't answer the, say, the discussion that's happening on the board at that time. And this happens not just with this board, this happens with any board, city commission, the Senate, the whatever. When it's closed, the forum is closed down, you're not allowed to address the board anymore. That's all. Unless the board or someone in the board actually specifically asks you a question that was brought up, and you really tend, the way this board has been set up, is that question and answer, if it's a public forum and it's requiring an answer to something, we give the staff the time to get their answers and answer us before they just speak off the cuff and just come up with anything. That's what happens in regards to that. Mr. Brown?
If I may, I don't have a problem if you don't desire that I do not speak at this meeting at all, but I will come back at the next meeting prepared. So that's it.
Well, I think let's not get caught up in a whole lot of protocol here. I think
okay.
I think Mr. Brown acknowledged the fact that the time for him to speak is according to the agenda at the public forum. I believe he asked if he could have special consideration to speak later, and that's the issue that's before the board, not whether we're following protocol or not. He's asked. He recognized he's supposed to speak now. He's asked for the opportunity to speak later. We either say yes or no, period.
I say yes. We put it up to a vote. Those in favor of Mr. Brown speaking later on, it's in essence moving the public forum to later on in the meeting. Mm-hmm. Say aye, I guess.
Just for clarification, this moving public forum for today.
For today, just today. And we've done that before. We've done that when people give presentations, when we have auditors that come out here and they say, listen, I have to get out of here by 8:30. Go ahead and speak. No.
But the only thing I just think we just sort of got educated on was about approving the agenda.
Yes.
And making sure we follow the order.
Exactly.
And we have already approved the agenda in this order. Mm-hmm. I'm just bringing that point back up because we were just educated correctly, and I appreciate that information. But, you know.
I'm in favor of putting it at the end because, and I don't know why it was changed before I was on the board then.
I can explain.
I'm sorry.
I can explain why it was changed.
Well, let me say this first then. Because when we have people that come in from the public, they want to see what we have to say first and gather up information, which was maybe perpetrate another question on their part. And I think that's fair. We are the public. We're supposed to be here for the public. And if anyone, I'm wrong, anyone wants to speak on the end, I don't see no problem with it. There's obviously no problem with that. But as long as I just keep it like that.
I remember why we moved it. Once he said that, it was because people who came to speak at the public forum would have to go through our entire meeting before they had the ability to speak.
That's right.
And a lot of them would just leave. And that's why. That's
a lot of who
wasn't
leave.
That
yeah.
it?
No, that's partial.
A lot of who would leave? The speakers?
The yeah.
Why would the speakers leave the company to speak?
Yes, sir. That's partially the reason. Mm-hmm. Government and the Sunshine Rule is what clarified this. And having it at the beginning of the meeting is required now so that people who want to speak can speak before you take action. So they speak at the end of the meeting, you've already taken action.
Okay. There, okay. That makes sense. So did you put a motion on the floor?
I said, and then I have to admit, Commissioner DeCesare did retort with a valid argument. I can't argue that.
You approve the minutes?
No, it was the agenda. The agenda was approved, as is, with one addition.
And they may have missed the reason why we just did that. I think Mr. Robinson and Ms. Perry may have missed just about, we were just doing some protocol, and I was glad it was brought to light about bringing things to the agenda. Mm-hmm. Making sure it's brought in at the beginning and not at the end without being notified at the beginning. And correctly,
before we came in.
Just before you came in, then we voted
right. That
unless anything else was added, then that would be the way the agenda would flow. And we just actually had this talk. It's not trying to be difficult. We just had it 10 minutes ago, and that's the only reason. But,
and, you know, and that's it. Yeah, he had a extremely valid point. And just to reiterate what I was saying is that there are four areas on this agenda that you're able to make modifications. Matter of fact, you can premise it. When you get that email the week before, if you want to add something to the agenda back then, you can contact Mr. Stevenson about that. Then when you get here, when we're looking at the agenda, item number one is approval of the meeting agenda. You can look at it and add something to it or make changes then. Then you have item number four, new business. You have something to discuss, you can put it in new business. You have also old business, which is item number five, and even other business. What we're going to try to steer away from is when we're ready to adjourn, bringing up brand new items at the moment we're going to adjourn. If there's a new item, you bring it up through any of these four parts of the agenda. These four parts. Now, getting to the one premising, let's get back to when we're emailing Mr. Stevenson. One thing happened that we can't allow that to happen. Commissioner Perry, you sent an email to the entire board. You're not allowed to email the board, right?
No,
not board business.
No, listen. This is one of the nuances in public records and government and the Sunshine Law. I wouldn't advise you to continue to do it because it's too easy to violate. So listen, this is what the rule is for everyone.
Right.
Yep. You can send a memo, you can send an email with your position about something, even if it's going to come up before the board in the foreseeable future, which is different from what the rule is. If you do either one of two things, it then becomes a violation. If you send that information and you say, I would like for you to vote the same way I do, it then becomes a violation. If you send the information and say, write back to me, I want to know your views on it, now you're communicating outside of the meeting. The reason why the email or the memo in and of itself doesn't violate is because the minute it was sent, it became a public record.
Right.
So you were right in premises, one of those little tiny nuances. I do, when I teach this, advise commissioners not to do it because it's too easy to violate.
I've never had that before.
Mm-hmm. Now we've had issues before with people emailing, so I've adopted the position, don't email me, don't call me, don't talk to me outside of the meeting. I don't want to step over into that area or have anyone perceive it that I'm doing something that's illegal, or that's why I leave. I'll talk to everyone in this forum. I'll talk to when there are people around, but once I'm gone, you'll never see me. If I see you in the supermarket, I'll wave and I'll move the other way. And it's for that reason. I really do take that the Sunshine Law and the Sunshine Law violation very, very, very serious. Because I would rather, one question I never want to answer, one question I never want to be asked, why? Why? And then you have to explain yourself, and then it opens up, no. There'll never be a why for me because it's never going to happen. So that's.
I remember you expressed that last time when it was brought up because one commissioner would email, and I remember you also gave us that speech about the perimeter parameters on it. So, and then you gave it almost the option you can receive them, but do not converse back and forth and things like that. And Mr. Pimentel, I remember, did say he did not want any of them. I remember saying that just to try to eliminate any possibility of that.
And. Considering I know you weren't on the board, we were always being written about in the newspaper in a negative light. I mean, there's nothing we could have done that was seen as good. So to be out of the newspaper is one of the greatest goals that we've achieved in the last few years, you know.
Now, one thing, and correct me, I think in the past, and if it said like Commissioner Perry created a document and forward it to the executive director, and as long as it did not have any of those premises in it, such as reply or what's your opinion, like informational purposes, then he can forward it out to the rest of the board, if I'm correct.
That's true, but even the way this was done, as long as the executive director was included, that makes it a public record because it's the authority's responsibility to maintain public records. So if this had gone to all of you, without the executive director, that would have been an issue. But again, I still say it's not what I recommend because it's too easy to violate.
Do you have a LHA email? Mm-hmm. Anyone? Does everyone have their LHA email?
Okay. Mine's working now.
Okay. No problem. Okay. Thank you. Then, Mr. Brown, do you wish to speak at the public forum in the beginning? I apologize that.
Actually, I'm going to apologize to all of you because I observed y'all talk for 15 minutes. Something could have been held in 2 seconds. Mm-hmm.
True. Okay. Then we're going to move on to item number.
Have we resolved the issue?
Have we? No, we have not.
According to the agenda, public forum is at the beginning.
At the beginning.
He has asked for special privileges to speak later. We never resolved that. Either yes or no.
And I put that to the board. Yes to the board or no. Simple as that.
And that's only for this meeting.
Is it that we're past the public forum? Is that what the issue is? Like
he can speak at the end. No, he'll speak at the end instead of in the beginning.
And yes. What's the reason?
According to the agenda, he speaks now or forever holds his peace.
Okay.
Well, not that.
Unless we give approval to move for this meeting only public forum to another point.
But what's the reason for not being able to speak now? Why is he waiting?
He's requesting. He's right there.
What's your reason?
My reason is a simple one. I wanted to see how this board operates, the interaction of the board members, and then I will speak at that point in time. That's my question.
We can
Well, the vote was already on the
floor.
On the floor. Okay. So, I guess roll call.
Roll call for voice vote.
Roll call.
Yes.
Commissioner Cannon-Tail.
Aye.
Commissioner Richardson.
Aye.
Commissioner DeCessari.
Aye.
Commissioner Sanders.
Aye.
Commissioner Robinson.
Aye.
And Commissioner Perry.
Nay.
Okay, Mr. Brown.
We'll move it to the end.
We'll move it toward the end, yes. Okay, now we're up to item number four, the new business, and under that is a travel policy.
Yeah, I think as you all know, when I first came here, there were a lot of financial issues, as well as administrative issues with the agency. And we've had to fix, you know, different things. And then as we made progress, we started to go back and fix other things. And one of which is that there's no travel policy for commissioners. And staff, one that's consistent, you know, and I think that you should have one because some commissioners, well, Brenda handles all travel for all staff, okay, and she handles for the majority of the commissioners, and that's done for a couple of reasons. One, I believe as far as like with staff, it's been my experience of, you know, working with a government entity that an employee doesn't book their own travel when the agency is paying the expense. Okay. And then with commissioners, to have a staff person to handle the travel, I think is a protection for the commissioners from public scrutiny, because they're saying, okay, if you by booking, you know, I'll give you an example, by you booking your own travel, you know, what did you take another airline, blah, blah, blah. And commissioners may have, but someone in public may just ask that question. Okay. And so what I'm suggesting, because I can't tell you all what to do, is a travel policy for commissioner, at least one that's consistent, you know, so that each commissioner is treated the same. And I think it also will alleviate problems where if there are issues where the commissioner goes out of town and stuff, and so that my staff can address the things in a timely manner and have it all hopefully addressed prior to the departure for the trip.
Do we have a written policy for commissioner's travel?
No.
That doesn't exist.
One question, Rick. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We have one for the staff and for employees, but we don't have one for the commissioners.
Right.
So the simple thing is to have HR work with our attorney to draft up one and bring it to us to vote on. That's all. We can sit here all night and talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's good to put it on the agenda to clarify that we need one.
Mm-hmm.
Now we'll put it in the hands of our attorney and HR to conform with the rules of the Housing Authority and bring it back to us for approval.
If that's your pleasure.
But otherwise, we'll be here all day talking about it.
Yeah. And I may have created this animal. I just went on a trip to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
I'll bring it out on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And Brenda did a great job on booking all my things. I said the only thing I booked myself was airline because my wife was traveling, so we could get seats together,
mm-hmm.
even though she did offer. And the only reason I took that liberty, because I was allowed that liberty 4 years ago when I traveled. They said I could do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I apologize if I failed to follow the correct procedure, but since I was granted it 4 years ago,
mm-hmm.
that's the only reason I only booked my flight, just because my wife wanted to try to get seats together. But I mean, and if that was a conflict, I apologize. But since it was granted before, that's why I brought it up. It may not be the issue, but I know I didn't travel recently. So it was not out of any trying to be deceptive or anything.
So our question is,
Is there a difference between how, I know when a commissioner travels under the umbrella of the housing authority or whatever agency they're under, there are certain protections that they're under, aren't there?
You mean protections?
You know what I mean, like covered under certain insurance, aren't they?
I'm not sure they're covered in the same way that employees are covered for travel.
Right.
And that's one of the things to maybe look at here. So all of you are clear on whether you're covered or not, number one. Number two, if you're going to come up with a policy, just for clarity, I could be wrong. I do think that there are some rules that may not be in a policy that y'all have already come up with. One rule had to do with a commissioner's travel amount, which is just for commissioners, it's not for staff. The other one was something you did last year, I believe, at Commissioner Hall's request, which was
your companion.
Not just about commissioners, but companion and that type of thing, if needed. So if we're going to do something about commissioners, I just want to make sure that you know that we may need to package all that into a single policy rather than having pieces of it.
Right.
Okay.
That's
right. And in packaging, we are going on these trips to represent the housing authority.
Yes.
Is that what it is?
Correct.
And the housing government is paying the bill for us to go.
Right.
But we're not covered up under any type of liability coverage.
I didn't say that. I don't think you're covered under the same way that employees are covered.
But there is a liability exposure.
When I report back to y'all,
okay.
I'll let you know. If there is, there should be a way to make you feel more comfortable. But again, since this just came up tonight, I'd rather make sure get with HR and come up with a policy that you look at.
That's right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sounds good.
Then what's going to happen is they're going to, as Reverend Richardson suggested, that's the word. I was going to get him to it. That's what I was coming to demand. Suggested. HR and legal come up with a travel policy and present it to the board for approval.
By next,
can we have it for next meeting?
Yeah.
Okay, then we're up to item, I'll say 4B, the executive director's evaluation. Now, when I left the meeting last time, I was ruminating on his evaluation, and it always goes back to, like we talk about numeric, things need to be numeric, numeric, numeric. An evaluation can never be numeric. An evaluation is a tool to look at how a person is performing. What we needed to do what, and people dismissed, in a way, I can only say dismissed, is when his goals were brought up, no one looked at his goals and said, you know what, this needs to be changed, this needs to be changed, this needs to be changed. It's goals that can be numeric, not an evaluation. It's a goal that can be numeric. So when his goals came out, that's our chance, the perfect chance to say, we're going to put this on you. We expect you to have 10% development in this time, and you can put a numeric to that. Commissioner Robinson speaks about when he deals with the public and how much interaction he has with the public, you can put a numeric to that, but you can put a numeric to that in his goals. You can't turn a goal, you can't take a goal and make it numeric and evaluate. You just can't do it. It has to be set with the goals. So we keep missing and dropping the ball, dropping the ball, dropping the ball, dropping the ball, and trying to run with it with the evaluation. It's the wrong tool. The correct tool are the goals, not the evaluation. So the evaluation isn't broken. It's the goals that's broken. And Commissioner Richardson came up with an evaluation that it is, the only word I could use, an awesome evaluation that they're actually using in other housing authorities right now. But I'm pretty sure a lot of them, the goals are numeric. Mm-hmm. I put myself into this. With the job I do every day, it's a numeric thing. It's based on the number of jobs I complete. So if I complete 10 jobs a day, I get a number for it. If I can, and say I got 100% for the day, but if I completed zero, I got 0%. But it's numeric. My job is all numeric. They can base me based on numbers. That's my goals. His goals have to be numeric, not his evaluation. So we're fixing the wrong thing. It's not the engine that's broken. We got a flat tire. We got to get that flat tire fixed.
Interesting enough.
Well, I'm still in the guy who was beeping at me when I'm driving over here. So, what do you say?
I appreciate that input, and I think you're right. I think it's a dual facet because you got to set the correct goals, and when you set those goals, though, you also have to make sure there is a component to measure them. And if you can't do that, if you put this arbitrary thing out there, what I may think it is and what you may think it is, we could be all over the spectrum. Because what certain things mean to certain people mean others. When you, and like one thing, and I, this is just something we used and I went through some training, it was called SMART goals. You got to make them specific, you got to make them measurable, you got to make them achievable. You can't set him up to fail. You can't set whoever you're evaluating up to fail. You got to make it relevant to their job. You can't make something so abstract out there that means nothing to what the person actually does. And then you also got to put a time bound. You know, where, how are you measuring? What's the deadline? Is the deadline realistic or whatever the measures are? You got to make them where they're together. They're really part of each other. Because if you make your goals out here, and your evaluation tool is not able to capture those components, then you defeated the whole purpose. I mean, it's just, and truly, that's the only reason I brought that up last meeting, just because, do I have exposure to it? Some, because this is some things we really have worked hard. Am I an expert at it? Absolutely not. And that's the only reason I even suggested at the last meeting. There are people who are experts at evaluating. They may look at our goals and say those things are so unrealistic to actually try to capture and measure that they would recommend the board to possibly throw them out to reevaluate them and recreate them. Because, you know, they're only as good as if you can measure them. And that, I mean, that's just my view on it. So I really think it's a dual factor, the goals and the measuring tools.
I just want to ask a question. What is your objective with this? You know, when I came here 5 years ago, this authority was identified being financially at risk. You had a whole bunch of administrative and financial problems, serious issues. And in my view, we're on a fast track to receivership. And that is where the bill comes in and takes over the agency. They get rid of the board, they get rid of legal counsel, they go up to the mayor. But they said, if you're in such bad shape, okay, someone had to come up with a plan to address that. Okay, and then someone had to implement that plan. And most of the time it takes 3 to 5 years, most times 5 years, to turn an agency around. And then that just to make it stable. This particular agency has had 3 consecutive years of a high performance. I realize that there are 7 opinions about whether or not the finances are in order or whatever, but you have a financial advisor, a private sector consultant that specializes in this, that's HUD approved, that reviews these finances. HUD is the one that has the final say so about the finances. Then you have an outside auditor who is an expert in the finances who reviews them. And then they're reviewed by HUD. Okay? 95% of the funding that comes to it comes through HUD. So you have to comply with HUD rules. Okay? And I was told when I was hired here, the most important thing is to turn this agency around. Okay? I work with the residents. I work with elected officials, all the way from Congressman Ross, the mayor, city council. I've even brought partnerships here. But some people say, I'm failing. I want to know, what is your objective? And you say the goals are not clear? What is your objective? If it's not to turn the agency around, and you trivialize it. That is something that is rare. Majority of housing authorities don't get that. And then again, within 3 consecutive years, within 5 years of going through what you've gone through, and then they say that there's a question of whether or not doing my job? What is your objective?
Well, I have to say that, what he's saying is absolutely 1,000,000% true, because HUD summoned me to Miami to discuss them possibly taking over the board, which the board would not exist anymore. As he said, they would have abolished the board and taken over the agency. And they wanted to know, pretty much, they weren't even happy with him. Like, they blamed him for everything that the previous administration did. And when I went there and we had a meeting with the entire, Jesus Christ, every HUD person that I could remember, and they gave us a chance. And they didn't just give us a failing chance. They gave us a chance that he springboard with and took it, and he went up. He went up. HUD is happy. And he's right. We're getting development. We're getting new housing units. He's taken us out of receivership. He's taken us out of the red. And we have had 3 years of high performer. That is an amazing thing to do. I mean, for goodness sakes, I always say, what next? What next can you do? They sold a property that no one could get rid of, and we weren't undercut by it. You know, we got a good price for it while they kept trying to steal it from us, and we're doing pretty good. So I think I echo what he says. What is possibly our objective? What is our objective? Is he accomplishing the objective that's the goal of the agency? What's our mission statement? To provide affordable housing for the public? I think we're doing that.
I think the question is that when we establish goals, we have to look at them differently. In the past, we've been establishing goals that weren't measurable, and I think we have to start getting in the habit of measuring. In other words, that the goal should be to improve such and such by this percentage by the end of the year. Specific. If you do it, you do it. If you don't, you don't. But we just are leaving it wide open, and it could be interpreted based on who's evaluating. So I think we just need to pay more attention to the goals. I don't think it's the instrument. I don't think it's any of those things. We're not doing a good job, and it's not fair to the executive director to not be specific about what we expect him to do. I think the last time I looked at some, when we first started, the last goals were like 10 goals, and it didn't make sense. I've never had a board that I reported to that held me to 10 goals. They picked 4 specific goals that were important to the agency. All the other stuff was fluff, you know, and that's what we need to start doing. Get 2 or 3 that make sense. He took us to a recovery plan. He achieved that. That was a goal that was measurable. I mean, but we just need to set the goal to say that. complete the recovery plan by such and such a date. That's it. And if you do that, then if that, that's what, or increase the property, increase the number of units by so many percentage. These are measurable. If you don't put it down that way, it's going to be left up to everybody to decide how to do it. And evaluation should be pretty simple if the goals are right. You either met it or you didn't meet it. See you later. Do you want to know? It's as simple as that.
And that's what I said.
But the goals we set have been so arbitrary that it allowed everybody to make up their decision of whether they thought he did or he didn't. It wasn't measurable. So I don't think it's the instrument. I think it's how we set the goals.
And I think that's what I was reflecting, just to make them not so interpretive by people's views. Make it where there's some solid concrete.
Right.
We received 47 complaints. Were 47 done within this timeline? How many were not done in this timeline? And then you evaluate them on, you know, on those type parameters. And this is just an example.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, we received that many. Were all 47 addressed? Did all 47 get a response? Was it done within whatever timeline we decided they needed to be returned on? Different factors like that. You know, public information requests. Were they received? Were they done timely within the parameters? Were they... I mean, set it where it can be measurable, not let's say, well, we got, you know, did they respond? Well, did they respond 2 years later, or did they respond on time? I mean, you got to put some type of measurement in timelines in there.
And it has to be realistic.
Yeah, correct.
You know, I noticed I didn't get a chance to look at the document in detail, but I think one of the things that was in the document about reduce the consumption of energy. Well, Our units are energy efficient.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we can.
Sorry.
It's so when you say reduce consumption, you got to take into consideration the condition of the property. You know, if it's new properties, then we could get into you know, solar heating and all of that. But you can't reduce energy when it's all going out the windows. So I think it has to be measurable.
We're reducing energy here right now.
Yeah, we're doing that. We reduce energy by what percentage? See what I'm saying?
Right. True. And just to speak on my document, it was just my thoughts on certain things that we can maybe measure. It wasn't like an exact
measurement. Right. No, there were some good
points.
But
it was also, an incorporation of what we discussed since my time being here on the board. Utility having the threshold being increased. I think that was a discussion there. Another was just resident self-sufficiency. How are we making them more self-sufficient so that they don't have to rely on public housing and things like that? So the things that we've discussed during our time here, maybe setting those as goals for our, you know, our housing agency. These are what we want to achieve as far as making sure that we are not only just providing, you know, affordable housing, but also preparing and helping our residents, you know, get the training that they need, get the education and things like that. So, I don't know. I just feel like I just try to add more measurable things in there. I know there are a lot of resources that HUD offers, and they're trying to push, you know, their Energy Star, and they have free ways that we can track utility to try and be more efficient. And I know we're big on trying to cut our costs down and things like that, so...
I've only done one evaluation, and when I came on board, I was at the end of when you guys were doing the evaluation, and I talked to you know just briefly, and that was I saw so many areas you had to do well in, and I've seen a lot of evaluation. It was about 15 or 20 areas where you had to do well in, and then when I came to the board, they were telling me that one commissioner. One commission brought this instrument to the board, and the board approved it. Then later on, I heard somebody else may put two or three more evaluation ideas in there, and that's what built it up to so many things that need to be approved. My main thing was youth bill and how we talk to and get along with the clients, and that was like you were saying, so archaic that you could not measure that. But you had about 20 different other things to do. And I couldn't see how you can easily get to this when you had so much surmountable things that had to be done. So if we can narrow it down to maybe four or five per year, And the other ones, I don't think the other ones are actually fluff, yeah, but do those four or five per year, and then if time permits, get to that stuff.
So I think we just need to take more time, like with youth, Bill. The things that's measured with youth, how many did you graduate, how many got their GEDs? That's
well, yeah, and another thing I was concerned about, the ones that did not finish, how are we treating those? That's when I brought up that, somebody brought up that idea of tutoring, the ones that did. So, I mean, oh, that's great. That's good measuring of how we did in the NPL.
Well, I think that what we can do is, and we try to eliminate this before, but we need to establish a committee to get together and create his goals for his next, I'm going to say for, it's 2018, because he already has a 2017 in.
Yeah,
and we have to create a committee, and their job will be to create his goals. Like I said, it's not the evaluation that we have to work on. It's the goals that you have to work on. And they'll come up with it and then bring it back to the board for approval. What do you say to that?
One thing I brought up, I know within the last meeting, and I think it's trying to put the element of, and I agree very much with you about the input from the board, and do I know financially what it would run, but I know there are groups that do this that can actually give us guidance and help us review these and make sure they are measurable according to what we're trying to achieve, because I know when we were doing this, you may think you have it resolved, and then all of a sudden you're not looking at all four corners. You may have got three corners covered, but the fourth one's dead, and then all of a sudden it blows it out where it's not perceivable again, or it's subjectivities there again. I know we're on a short leash, truly, I meant to bring it up the previous meeting, had a commitment, did not get out of. So that's what I mean. I thought we could have a couple months. I did bring it up a month later than I originally intended. I know right now this one is the one we're bound to, because this is the one we presented to them at the beginning of the year. And you cannot change in mid-flight, not at the end of the evaluation period. So it was just, I agree that Reverend Richardson did an awesome job putting this together. But the big thing is making sure the goals and the review things match, or at least where you can have it where the subjectivity is more measurable. That's the only thing I'm saying. That's my only objective. I think Ben asked us what our objective was, and just to make it fair for him. Truly, that's my only intention, is to make it fair for him. Make it where it's not so subjectivity there. Not saying anything about what he did. I mean, I appreciate him outlining all his accomplishments over the last 3 years. But also you can't recognize those if the tool does not meet up where you can put those to get the components together. And I want to thank Commissioner Perry for spending the time to bring this information to us that she compiled. I mean, I had mentioned this at the beginning of the meeting that I knew you weren't going to be running a few months late, just so we could touch base on it. So,
what do you say about establishing the committee?
Your prerogative, you're the chairman.
We can establish. Would it be the personnel committee? Would that be a duty of the personnel committee that we had, Rick?
Do you remember? You could. But keep in mind now, you don't have any.
No, we don't have any committees, just ad hoc.
Yeah, we.
So you would just create a committee.
Create the personnel, then ad hoc. So
ad hoc. We disbanded the committee.
Yeah, we disbanded. So then I say we create the personnel committee just for this function to evaluate. I mean, to create goals and evaluation, and hopefully with the assistance, I'd say, of a labor council. Mm-hmm. Do we have to vote on that or put a motion, or
You know, and a big key component is not only the board, but then also having Ben's view and buy-in on it too.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's a important facet of what his job duties. We're not here day in, day out. He is. And I mean, it's our, we're his, part of his team, we're his actually managers, but, you know, he's day-to-day operations, and he's our only employee, and we need to pay justice to him to make sure we give him actually a fair evaluation from a tool that represents what he does. So
that would be great. So, Commissioner Richardson, are you free to serve on that board, on that ad hoc committee?
I'm not free, but I'm not too expensive. Yes, I'm
Pizza.
I don't have a problem.
All right. I mean, and Commissioner Perry, do you have availability to serve on that committee?
Sure, but I do just want to comment, like, overall, like, to answer your question, like, my objective is to make it as fair as possible and as clear the expectations that we have for you. And the intent was for everyone to be on the same page. Ultimately, when it comes time to evaluate yourself, that there's nothing that surprises you because the facts are the facts. And also, another objective of mine was, even though we're like a high performer, it still should be that desire to still want to do better, want to improve. There are always something that we can improve on. So, yes, it's great that we're a high performer. I'm very proud of that and of the effort that you did and your team did to get us here. But it's still our responsibility as a board to still push to do what we need to do to become better, because there's always room for improvement. So that was just my overall objective. But to answer your question, yes.
Okay. And I'll go on the board, on the committee also. Okay. Now, we need a labor council.
Yeah, I think we probably have a legal pool. And I think we'll check to see if one of those is a specialist in that.
Okay.
And help with that.
Once you have that information, then we can move on to scheduling and look at everyone's schedule to see when this board can meet. I mean, I keep saying the board, Jesus Christ, superstar. The committee can meet. Okay, can we move on to number 5 before we all pass out here? Old business. LHA recovery plan update.
I'll give you a quick snapshot of what's going on. If you look in the package, Ben's report goes into a little more detail. I'll just give you the highlights. We held the recovery meeting on April 12th. Commissioner Hall is out of the country, so confirm the meeting, because only two of us, so we had enough to conduct the meeting. Commissioner Pimentel was a guest at that meeting, which I would like to say that the recovery meetings are open to anybody, even though Commissioner Hall and myself are the ones that reside over that meeting, but it's open to any board member. The Westlake property, the city's completed the proposal, and we're just waiting for them to sign off. They forwarded to HUD and waiting their approval. The green reuse proposal has been approved and we're moving forward on that. We moved phase one to phase two, which we had talked about before in other meetings. In the demo, we're just waiting for approval to do the demo. Phase one calls for the developer to privatize the streets, and that's a bone of contention that we're trying to work with, because that means if we own the streets, we own all the problems. So we're trying to resolve that. Phase two is we've been successful in getting a 4% bond, so that's good environmental acceptance assessment. Is waiting on Jacksonville to give us the response to that. The relocation plan has been written and ready for submitting. So Westlake is on schedule for the upgrades of that property. The 10th Street property, if you've been driving by there lately, you'll see the progress is really moving on. Even though we've sold it, we still have an interest in the community, and they're really doing a great job of cleaning that out. Williamstown is waiting for the announcement for when we have the ribbon cutting ceremony. If you've been up to Sam's lately, you'll notice that they're always out tearing down trees.
I saw that this weekend.
They're cutting down trees, and that's moving. That's moving on. So I think that those two projects, both the 10th Street and Williamstown, is really, again, I think kudos to the staff and to the executive director for finally getting those two properties sold and moving forward. We have had some interaction with the local church in regard to the 10th Street property. That's Webster Street, we call it, Webster Street. The church, looking to buy that property.
I think it's Greater Bethel Tabernacle or something like that. Off of, the church is on Webster Street.
Right. It's a 10th Street property that we're talking about.
The second 10th Street property, the one across on Colton Meadows.
Mm-hmm. So, it's just in a talking stage, but they are talking to the executive director to try to
purchase the church.
Get that resolved.
Webster is trying to purchase it? Are looking at it.
They're looking at it.
That we don't want to sell that property that they're offering. But what we do want to do, you may recall that Willie Horton, the Detroit Tigers, are interested in doing something. And after meeting with that group, I put them in touch with Mr. Horton to see if they can come together with a shared vision, so they both have the same vision, they could share their vision. And if it's something that's, you know, benefits the overall community, we'll be willing to work with them. And so, but of course, it's all in the planning stages right now.
Cool. The only other thing that we're reporting is that we're looking at a new piece of property. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Cambridge Cove property up.
That's the Revolution.
The thing is that with the, because it was a deadline for signing the letter of intent, we didn't get approval from the board on that. We have to.
That's in the resolution. Okay. I'll go.
That's
with
a retro.
If you
want,
I just want to make sure.
Yeah.
That we did cover it in the meeting.
If you want, I can.
And I think the executive director will fill you in. There's only one deal breaker to the whole thing, and that is that. They want the $1.5 million that we're putting up as earnest money till we do our due diligence. They want that to be non-refundable. So that's the deal breaker. So we'll see where we go.
You want to add anything?
Yeah. Basically, this is a tax credit property. Mm-hmm. And as you all know, we have tax credit properties as well. And the tax credit is going to take approximately like 10 to 15 years. And at the end of that compliance period, Fund Corporation wants you to put the property up for sale to someone who, so that a potential buyer who will keep the property affordable, because there's a 40-year affordability period that's associated with the tax credits, provided that the owner can continue to do that. And with our tax credit properties, we have the right of first refusal in our deal, meaning that the investor, if they're going to sell it, they have to sell it to us, make offer to us first, okay? That's if they decide to sell it and not keep it themselves, okay? And, and as far as the Finance Corporation and the IRS work together, IRS has a formula that they use to calculate the value of the property. And then Foreign Federal Corporation looks at the tax credit application itself and what commitments are made in there. And then they come up with a sales price for the property. That's how they came up with the 17.552197 price for the Cambridge Cove property. And you have a year to basically look at it and say, well, you want to buy the property. Unfortunately, we only found out about it when there's about 2 weeks left on the deadline, because you have to submit what's called a letter of intent by March 31st. The better letter to me that, hey, we would like to buy this property. Can we start discussing this with you? And we propose a division period, and we propose 90 days, which includes a 45-day due diligence period whereby you go and you look and inspect the property and determine whether you want to buy it. And then after that, you have 45 days to obtain financing to basically be able to purchase the property. And the letter of intent, I propose $100,000 refundable deposit, okay? And anytime during that due diligence period, the 90 days, we just we don't, if it's not work for us, we get that back. And so, but we had a March 31st deadline to do that. And so, as you know, we didn't have a board meeting, didn't have time to call a special board meeting. So I sent the letter of intent with the understanding that I would then come to the board and ask y'all to retroactively approve those actions, because no money has exchanged hands, it's just a letter. Okay? And then, and what that does is allow us to enter into negotiations with the owner to see if we can come up with a contract to purchase the property. And again, with that, and basically you have to go through an interview with the owner where they decide whether or not you all, do you know enough about tax credits, do you know enough about property management, because if you buy it, can you maintain it, blah, blah, blah. And one of the negotiations that the owner, because the owner doesn't want to sell the property because they can turn it into market rate, and it's a very nice property, and they can make an awful lot of money if they stop making it affordable. And so the owner is asking for a $1.5 million non-refundable deposit. They can ask for that, okay? We don't have to agree to it, which we're not going to agree to.
But if you don't agree to it, that's a rejection, isn't it? Turned down.
You can negotiate that amount of that deposit. And you also negotiate whether or not it's non-refundable, mm-hmm. okay? Because in a similar deal over in Sanford, the deposit did not become non-refundable until the end of the due diligence period, mm-hmm. okay? And so, and we have to talk to Foreign Fund Corporation and see if there's some other way around it. And we have to do April 27th deadline to do that. So if we can work with Foreign Fund Corporation and find some that way and say, okay, we should pursue this, then we will ask that we have a special call board meeting where y'all will be okay for us to enter to the country. That'll be one day next week, probably Wednesday or Thursday. The deadline is Friday. And but that's, we have a second follow-up call with the seller and the, I guess, call them a facilitator on this coming Thursday. And as part of our due diligence, we're also going to talk to Father Final Corporate to find out exactly what our options are and the like. And we'll probably do that tomorrow. And so that's where we are. And basically what I'm asking the board to authorize me to do is, one, to say it's okay to have submitted that letter, and then two, to continue with the negotiations.
Is that part of the same resolution? Or
that is the resolution. Okay.
That is the resolution, yeah.
I read that.
Okay. 200 units.
Yeah, 200 units, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can you repeat the letter of intent, is refundable on under what terms?
What I proposed, mm-hmm. okay, was that the $100,000 that we put down as a deposit will be refundable anytime during that 90-day due diligence period. Okay. And when I say due, I know it may sound confusing to say there's a 45-day due diligence period where you review the property, and then another 45-day period where you try to find a lender to lend the money. And we are looking at two lenders that are looking at the bill. One is offered 100% financing, so that's how I'm looking at it. And just hit the numbers with it.
Okay, so they're asking for a refund, just thinking.
That's all right.
They asked me just trying to get my thoughts together. Mm-hmm. The seller asked for $1 million or whatever the amount was refundable, so as that we will turn it down, right? Is that why they asked for so much?
Yeah, if it's not refundable, you don't know why. I'll tell you why.
So why would they bankrupt then?
That's why they haven't been able to sell it.
Well,
they've been trying for a year to get rid of that. But also, again,
we came in at the end with this one, and when Finance Corporation gets involved, you probably can get that deadline extended, okay, to, like I said, to the end of the due period when you review the property, and then it's applied towards the purchase price. But the way this particular seller is wanting to do it, asking for that $1.5 million, like, say, basically next month. And then they're going to say, yeah, we're going to negotiate good faith with the cows. I get this $1.5 million whether I sell it to you or not.
Right.
That's not an option.
Right.
Okay. But again, also, too, they can ask for that. We haven't agreed to that. Okay. All that's a part of the negotiation.
So this is, we okaying this amendment. It's just okaying to go into negotiation.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And should negotiation be successful, whereby me, i.e., they back off for that non-refundable deposit, you know, immediately, then we'll come back to the board for approval to continue to proceed. But if there's no way around it, there's no need to come back to you. But I will let you all know.
Well, yeah, come back either way.
I'm sorry?
Come back and let us know something either way.
Well, I can let you know at the next board meeting.
Right, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And also, I think that there'll be, this is a great opportunity, because one of the ways that will make it work would be if we were to get some more tax credits associated, like a 4% bond, which would bring the mortgage down, the loan down, price down, which would make it more manageable. And heard a rumor that there may already be a bond associated with it, but haven't confirmed that. But even if we don't, with at least one of the lenders agreed to a 3 to 5 year period where you only pay the interest on the loan, which allows time to obtain a 4% bond, which will refinance the loan.
Okay.
That's great.
All right. Yeah, I think we should just vote on the resolution since he spoke about it in detail. Do we have a motion to approve Resolution 17-1442?
I make a motion that we approve it based on the fact that it's used only for negotiation purposes and nothing will be done until we approve the second part.
No, that's
too long. Let me shorten it.
That's in the resolution.
Okay,
already.
Okay. Just like you said, okay.
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a first and a second.
I approve the
motion to approve the resolution.
Right.
Resolution number 17.
Number 17-1442.
No, that's.
We have a first and we got a second. Brenda, roll call.
Discussion.
Oh, discussion? Go ahead.
Oh, no. I just thought Ben did a great job on presenting the information, but Reverend Richardson just had my ears parked up when he made a statement they were trying to dump it for a year now and they haven't been able to. I didn't know if there was any history that may be privy to help us understand why they've had trouble moving it for the last year.
Well, the seller doesn't want
to sell it.
He really doesn't want to sell it.
Oh, I thought. I heard that part.
The Finance Corporation forces you to make it available for a period of
time.
And if it's a high-performing property, you know, you only want to keep it. Especially want the tax credits, leave the project out there, and he could just make it all market.
Okay, I heard that part from you. He perked me up when he said I thought there might be some other underlying reasons.
Well, even
on the side that, that's the only reason I brought
that. Even at that, you say you want to do your due diligence to inspect the property.
The reason why I said that, if $1.5 non-refundable has been part of every deal they've been talking about. You can understand why it hasn't.
Nobody's going to bite that.
That was the reason why you made that. All right. I just didn't know if there was anything else besides that.
That's the difference. Because he was saying that, that's what they were saying what happened at Sanford. But basically what happened was that they had about a 3-month negotiation period. Okay. And then during that time, the buyer did their due diligence.
Okay.
And then they did the contract. But because we got in here so late, that's why we have a shorter deadline.
Gotcha.
And we have to talk too far in front to see if we can get an extension.
Okay. Well, if that's the only reason he said that, that makes sense. Now, I just want to make sure there wasn't something else that maybe he heard against the wall somewhere.
They really don't want to sell it.
Okay. Now, is this near Sam's Club also, or I'm trying to picture where this is at?
I-4 and Kathleen Road.
Is it sort of near the new Dodge and Toyota?
Toyota and Dodge. Those green.
That road right there?
Okay. Those really nice ones?
Yeah, they're nice.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I know I can't afford them, so
I got them.
They look very nice. I know exactly what you're talking about now. By the Toyota and Dodge. They built the new Dodge and Toyota.
Just so you know, we have, I think it's 45 families that are in Section 8 families. 65.
Already in there.
Section 8 families that
are in there. Okay, good. Okay, I know exactly. It's nice. Yeah, those are very nice, and it looks like they're maintained well.
Yep.
I knew I've heard that name. I just was trying to picture where it was at.
Okay. Any more discussion, questions? Roll call.
Commissioner Fantentail.
Aye.
Commissioner Richardson.
Aye.
Commissioner Cessary.
Aye.
Commissioner Sanders.
Aye.
Commissioner Robinson. Aye. And Commissioner Perry.
Aye.
Okay. Resolution 17-1442 passes. We're up to item number 6, Secretary's Report. Housing and Operations. I'm not going to even say admin and finance. Just get
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I did want to add one thing.
You already submitted it. Duh, we don't want to hear it.
Go ahead. With Alba Manor, the owner of the property that's around 17 acres has a buyer for his portion, and so he's willing to now put in an easement on that and give us access, we have access to our property at their expense. I've even agreed to that. Okay, I believe that did that because. With them going to do that their expense, we not only have access to a property, but also we can, if we want to develop that property later on, we can.
Is that by the Pope Parkway you're talking about property?
Alba Manor.
Pope Parkway, is it out there?
Yes.
By the,
exactly.
Okay, the one you showed me that time, that's, okay.
Convenient. Okay, Ms. Admin and Finance.
Okay. I'm going to do the summary and try to make it quick for everybody because I know we're all about to pass out. The Central Office Cost Center, I'm going to try to get this in context of the goals that were established back in 2014 when we started developing our recovery plan. I know we have new commissioners that weren't a part of that. But at the time, COCC was operating over budget. In 2012, the financials were... The budget was overspent by $1.3 million. In 2013, the budget was overspent by $1.2 million. In 2014, we were overspent $300,000. Then the 2015 financials, we got it down to $30,000. The whole purpose of the recovery plan was to make sure the Central Office Cost Center was operating in a break-even budget. 2016 financials, the auditor will be here the week of June 12th to actually go through the financials and look at our initial FDF submission that happened on March 14th. But for COCC to be going through the year and have a positive NOI of $11,386 for the period and $35,479 for the year to date, that's a good sign that we're still moving in the right direction for recovery. And the mere fact that we went from overspending $1.3 million, $1.2 million to only overspending $30,000 for 2015 is phenomenal. But part of that was because we did have a reduction in force, and we went through with the HR team to actually combine roles so you have less people doing more work and having dual functions instead of a single function. Housing Choice Voucher Program, if you look at the financials, we do have a negative NOI of $6,644 for administration and negative $64,277 for the HAP, which is the Housing Assistant Payment. One thing that you have to keep in mind with the Housing Choice Voucher Program is that when you look at the cash report, there's $417,000 in cash. When you have cash, HUD makes you either absorb vouchers from other housing agencies where people want to port in, or you actually have to put more vouchers out on the street. When they do that, if you look at the financials, you'll notice that we're getting less subsidy. They're going to reduce what they give us, perhaps, until we run up these reserves. We're cautious in doing it as far as absorbing vouchers and putting vouchers on the street, because back in 2012 when we came in, HUD told us the same thing. Oh, you have too much money in reserves, then we overspent. And then we had to go through shortfall with HUD. So it's not that we're not paying attention and not putting vouchers out or absorbing people. We're doing it slowly to make sure that we still have enough reserves to keep operational if our funding is cut for whatever reason. So you will, as we progress through the year, you'll see that cash reserve go up and down, because we're going to put vouchers on the street. And then you'll see our subsidy increasing. Public housing, AMP 1. I'm going to take out the fact that we did the sale of 10th Street property and just look at the NOI that we had for the period. And it would have been negative $11,832 for the period and negative $4,595 for year to date. Even though the housing staff has been working diligently to make sure they're collecting rent, and if you look at the income statement, they are collecting rent, but we had a reduction in subsidy during the last 6 months of 2016. Also, January through March, we had less subsidy. When I pulled down subsidy for April, HUD recognized that they hadn't given us enough, so we've got more subsidy in April 1 than we did for the past 8 months. So what you're going to see in the April statement is a decrease in the subsidy, because HUD recognized that they under-subsidized public housing. Dakota Park, same situation. It has a combination of tax credits and public housing units. We had a negative NOI of $5,513 before depreciation. Again, we had reduced subsidy for the last 6 months of 2016 and January through March 2017. If you look at when you see the April financials, you're going to see that Dakota Park's monthly subsidy went from $5,000 to $9,000. For April, because they recognized for those 8 months we didn't receive enough subsidy, and HUD is making the adjustments. Renaissance, Colton Meadows, Bonnet Shores all have positive NOI before depreciation. Renaissance, I want to point out something I should have pointed out with public housing. They both had REACT during the month of March. Public housing had a score of 76, Carlos?
75.
Okay. You have to remember Westlake is a 1930s property. We have in a demolition application because the property is not only obsolete, but there's certain quality of life items that you just can't get. For instance, half of the units have no air conditioning whatsoever. It's not like you can easily put heating and air, which is part of the reasons why we need to build back new. Also, the infrastructure underneath it is from 1930. So again, it is more cost effective in the long run to actually build back new, because if you look at the green physical needs assessment that was done in 2013 in response to trying to rehabilitate the property in lieu of tearing it down, you would spend $8 million in rehab, but those same 60 units would not have central heating air. It didn't factor in any new infrastructure. You'd be still using the same 1930s infrastructure. So it's not surprising that it's great that public housing was able to pass its REACT with a score of 75, but you didn't expect it to score highly because it is obsolete and does need to be demolished. As far as Renaissance, even though this property will be coming out of its 15-year compliance period, the manager there did a phenomenal job. She actually got an 87. If I recall, it's one of the highest scores that we've had for Renaissance. Okay. In its last part of its life, not in the beginning when it was new. And again, also, the property manager had an event that actually brought the community out. She had fundraisers and got donors to donate properties, donate funding for the event. So you will see in April's financials where those donations from various community partners came in for that property. Manor West Bartow has a positive NOI of $20,607 before depreciation. Hampton Hills has been a long-term issue because it has negative NOI, but surprisingly only $168 for the year before depreciation. This property, we did not anticipate receiving any subsidy from HUD because it's leased to purchase, and we've sold five houses and have seven left to sell. But HUD, in looking at what the expenses were for the last 6 months of 2016, as well as the first 3 months of 2017, actually funded $5,749 in subsidy for April. So although we anticipated getting nothing, HUD recognized that they still needed to provide us with some subsidy. And then Youthville has a positive NOI of $7,009 for the period, and we still have the negative NOI of $6,281 for year to date. And again, as part of the audited financials, we're still going through that reconciliation between where we met one of our other requirements and our, when we had the forensic audit in 2012, they talked about the fact that you had bank accounts that were combined, CLCC and Youthville were combined. They were combined in the past because Youthville used to be a HUD program. HUD turned that program over to the Department of Labor. It should have, back in the early 2000s, been split and had its own bank account. When we came here, it didn't. Once we got the finding, we did, when we procured a new financial institution, because another part of that 2012 forensic audit is that we were paying too much for bank fees. We need to put a solicitation out. We did a procurement. We got TD Bank. At that point in time, any programs that had combined bank accounts, they were split, as they should have been. And we're still doing all of the reconciliation to separate those funds, but it will have to be done before September 30th this year, because that's when the audited financials have to be turned in to HUD and be complete. And the key thing about CLCC is the feds are looking at refederalizing the central office cost center. So anything that we have related to inter funds has to be resolved with the 2016 audit. Otherwise, it's going to carry on into when they actually refederalize central office cost center. Moving along to the grant report. We had another milestone that we had to meet for April 12, 2017, and that was in our CFP 2015 capital funds. What I wanted to do, because at one point in time, we had capital funds that we had recaptured because they were not obligated by the deadlines or expended. So if you look in the back of your report, you'll actually see an ELOC screen. And if you turn the page, it's the second page of the report, you'll see that I highlighted the CFP 2015 funds. You'll see that they had to be obligated by 4/12/2017 at 90%. We did meet that deadline. So those funds are secured. Also, if you go to the back of the report, you will also notice that we had the HOPE 6 and the Replacement Housing Factor Funds. We had a total of $1.9 million in HOPE 6 funds that had to be obligated because it was a 1999 grant, and HOPE 6 grants had to be expended within 5 years. But fortunately, with 1999, that was before Congress changed the rules, and they didn't have an expenditure deadline, so we have been able to get extensions. When we closed the micro cottages at Williamstown, we secured those funds. The copy of HUD approval and committing a total of $6,687,472 for the project is attached, so you know all of the RHF funds from 2009 to 2016 are secured with the micro cottages of Williamstown, as well as the 1999 Hope 6 grant is secured with the micro cottages at Williamstown. And then you also had some public housing reserves that shows up in the financials for AMP 1 that will be, now that we have this letter, we will actually open a separate banking account for Williamstown and all of the money will be segregated. HUD is going to keep their money. We'll submit the draws for the $4 million, but the $2 million will actually do from our account with Williamstown because that's either program income or sales, well, other forms of program income, like the sale of the 10th Street property. That was instrumental because that gave us the funding necessary to have money in the deal to be able to close and commit the funding for construction. The last item that we have in the administration report is based on youth bill, and we talked about goals. If you look at the first page, under the 2014 DOL goals, enrollment is 100%. We have 57 students enrolled. Placement in education and employment is 82.46%. And attainment of a degree or certificate is at 91.23%. One of the items that we have to remember is that Youth Build is one of those programs that everybody's looking at closely to see if they're going to continue with the program. The reason why we have been successful for 10 years having Youth Build grants is because all of our grant applications have been under $1 million for the requests that we have, and then we've provided either match or leverage those funds. With the grant being under $1 million for a 3.5 period where you have a startup of the grant, then you have your 3 years of actually operating and doing your various cycles, and then you have closeout to follow up with the participants. The team has had to get other funding like Publix grants and Travelers to help supplement salaries. This grant, when I went back and looked, even if you go back as far as 2011, the most that this grant supported is having 5 employees. So when we talk about in the goals and objectives about how many people that we're doing outreach, we got to remember that because we're under $1 million to have the grant, that we're going to have to go out and try to get other grants to cover salaries, because what DOL gives us is not enough to cover even 100% of the salaries of the 5 people who are charged to the grant. The rest of their salaries are either being picked up by other programs because they're working on other items, or if they're working 100% in Youth Build, the program manager has had to go out and get funding. So I just want to, when you're coming up with the goals for 2018, remember what they have to do to be competitive. That DOL is a separate grant from HUD, is no longer with HUD. So when we're thinking about objectives and you're looking at the bulk of the objectives, that we have to take care of HUD first because that's our parent organization. Our whole purpose is to provide affordable housing, and the Youth Build program is really what I consider in New Orleans, we say lagniappe, or we're doing an extra bit because we know if we're doing development projects, you need Section 3, you need to provide job opportunities for low-income families that live in the area. But if DOL doesn't continue to get the funding that they need from the Youth Build grant, we may not be able to increase the amount of outreach. And I would like to remind everyone that even participants who don't make it into the program, those other grants that the program manager has gotten to leverage the DOL grant, she actually uses to give them an opportunity to get assistance with getting a high school diploma or passing the GED to help them maybe get into the next cycle if they weren't accepted into the first cycle. So we do our best not to turn anyone down. We let them know if they don't make the cycle, to still keep coming by every day. because we use those other grants to help pay for them.
You have questions, ma'am?
Yes.
Gotcha. Of these students that you have, perfect, good job, great job, excellent job. Of the students that we have, how many of those are coming out of the area that you speak of in the second paragraph?
Well, we have two grants that are concurrent. We just got the 2016 grant. We're doing cycling. And I will have to go back and get the specific numbers, but as far as the 2014, there are 57 students enrolled. The outreach, we typically do 18 to 19 participants per cycle. So with the 2016 grant, we're actually doing the recruiting to get the next 18.
And most of the students are coming out of the area of the Pauli Diggs area?
That is correct. That is the target area. That was part of the reason why it was so important to move from across the street, not just because we plan to revitalize Wesley, but also because the grant was written to serve the participants in the Pauli Diggs neighborhood. Okay. But as far as the exact number, I would have to go back to look at that. I don't know that off the top of my head.
Can I ask you one more question?
Okay.
The DOL monies that you get and other grants are not part of HUD. That's what you just said.
That's correct.
Right. So that's why we don't necessarily need to see any kind of financial statements, any kind of money statements, because it's not part of HUD.
Well, the financial statements for Youth Bill, because it is a federal program, we are able to put it inside of our crosswalk. So when we do the FDS, if you have it completely unrolled and you looked at all the programs, Youth Bill is inside of it. It gets posted into this crosswalk. What happens when the auditor presents it and it goes onto our website, all those entities are rolled up, because right now we've got 33 entities in addition to Lakeland Housing Authority plus Youth Bill. All that gets rolled up. So what HUD wants to see is the ones that are just public housing. Those are split out because they want to see specific Section 8. And DOL understands that they're inside our crosswalk. So what happens is when we do our financials, when we actually publish them, we send them to DOL. So they actually can see how Youth Bill is performing inside of that crosswalk. Additionally, they will come and do their own audits and say, okay, we're using Yardi. We have a construction module that shows specifically the grant, and then on a quarterly basis, like right now it's quarterly reporting time, not just for HUD but for DOL. So I have to go into HUD's website to do the quarterly report for the Hope 6. I also then go into the DOL website and produce all the financials for the quarter. And then it shows our cost performance index for the entire grant. So for instance, the 2014 grant started in July of 2014. It shows all of the money spent today, how much we left remaining, and they inside how we have to populate that website shows the cost performance index of whether or not we're outpacing the money, underpacing, and we also have to put in the match that we get from other grants and other partners. All of that gets reported on a quarterly basis directly to Department of Labor.
Yeah. And then plus there's a new bill financial report in your monthly financial report.
That's what it is. Okay.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. Then we've already done the resolutions. Legal report?
After that summary, I will pass.
Good. It's the brown.
Okay. I want to thank all of you for being so patient and waiting and allowing me to speak. But tonight I'm going to speak in my official capacity as the first vice president of the Florida State Conference in NAACP branches. It is my responsibility to go around the state visiting housing authorities to see how you function and what you are actually doing in the various communities which you serve. So one of my ways of doing that is to observe taking action of the board. Because if the board is in disarray, I can imagine what you're doing in the various communities. nothing is going to happen. And for those of you who know that I've been around this board a long time, and I've seen it when it was really in disarray, for real disarray. So I'm saying to you, I've seen some improvements. You're doing a good job. As far as your goals are concerned, I think, just as an aside, you need to put everything on the table and then you all prioritize your priorities. What is most important that you want to see get done? And then make an allowance because depending upon your funding source from HUD, that may have to be revisited. So you need to understand, don't get something so rigid that you know is not going to happen. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, any other business? Then, in the cause of safety, before we pass out, I will be adjourned.
That was a phone call. I just got. Where are you at?
You think she's still going to let you eat?
Well, I know. Where are you at?
She gave me a water at 11. That's so good. Water tonight. It's nice seeing you, Reverend.
It's good to be here. Good to be here. All right, take care.
Good evening. I don't know about y'all, but I lost 10 pounds tonight. How about you?
I needed it, though. You don't. I needed it.
You still cool.
No matter who we spoke, but then they said they got to scream somewhere to compromise. I don't want to get to the point, but it was a good conference. Ben Carson, I thought he did a nice speech. It was good to see. It was definitely different than the summer conference. Going through the legislation thing was really, we had to wait in line for over an hour at the
meeting adjourned 7:40.
See the Senate and they had like a Jewish conference.